The show you have selected will start directly after the next message.
Welcome to the future you. Frank Lloyd Wright once said, "Study nature, love nature, stay close to nature, and it will never fail you." At Zija, we love nature. We study nature. In India, we discovered Moringa and created Moringa Supermix, a revolutionary new combination of organic ingredients, including natural vitamins, minerals, proteins, antioxidants, and omega oils. Zija's new Moringa Supermix will help you make a change for the better. Simply click on the Zija banner on the UKHealthRadio.com homepage. Power people need power vitality.
You're listening to UK Health Radio. Welcome to the Therapy Suite. I'm Duncan Ellison, a therapeutic counsellor with a focus on positive mental health. This week, it's a dementia special programme. I'll be talking to Nicole Mitchell, who specialises in holistic massage for people with dementia. She'll be sharing her thoughts on why massage is so important. We'll also learn why watching football can help bring back memories. Music on the way from Mike Oldfield and the House Martins, and wise words to ponder over. So if good mental health matters to you, then this is a show not to be missed. Join me, Duncan Ellison, as we open the doors to the Therapy Suite, only on UK Health Radio. Welcome along to a special edition Therapy Suite this week. With the World Cup over and a few dreams shattered, we'll be looking back at how replaying iconic football games could help dementia sufferers hold on to special memories. And with the complimentary therapy awards ahead of us, I'll be chatting with someone who is doing amazing work with dementia patients. I hope you'll enjoy that. So let's crack on in the usual fashion with a topical headline story. Watching football can be good for mental well-being, a dementia expert has said. As record numbers of England fans tuned into the World Cup, Professor Alistair Burns said that older people in particular can benefit from watching classic football matches such as England's 1966 World Cup final victory. Tony Jameson Allen, co-founder of the Sporting Memories Foundation, which tackles dementia, depression and loneliness, said, "Sport unites communities and generations. It stirs the soul and can reawaken powerful emotions. Watching replays of sporting events can improve mental health and well-being by keeping the brain active and stimulating memories." Professor Burns, who is the NHS England's clinical director for dementia, said several members of the golden generation of 1966 have experienced dementia, with winners Nobby Stiles and Martin Peters currently living with the condition. He went on to say, although fans may not feel it right now, football can be good for your nerves. The beautiful game really can help your mind and body. As well as being great physical exercise, there is a positive link between watching classic football matches and keeping the mind active. For people in old age and dealing with dementia, re-watching matches can rekindle past memories and connect people with their past whilst keeping the brain active. Johan Cruyff was right when he said football is a game you play with your mind, and a sport of any kind has a unique power to keep the brain going. Professor Burns said the power of sport can stimulate emotion, which can be revived many years after the event. Emotional memory, which is one of the two main types of memory in the human brain, can be more powerful than memory for personal events. So as people later in life relive exciting or tense moments, it can stimulate memories, potentially strengthening brain activity. There is considerable overlap between the experience of people living with types of dementia and mental ill health. Across the UK, 850,000 people are estimated to live with dementia, whilst mental ill health affects almost 8 million people aged 55 and over. An Age UK survey last year showed that conditions such as depression and anxiety affect more than half of people aged over 55, nearly 8 million people, with one in five saying their condition has deteriorated as they've got older. Tony Jameson Allen, co-founder of the Sporting Memories Foundation, which tackles dementia, depression and loneliness, said sport unites communities and generations. It stirs the soul and can reawaken powerful emotions. Every week, we witness the positive impact recalling great sporting moments has on the physical and mental well-being of our group of members, many of whom live with dementia. Be it the iconic commentary as Sir Geoff Hurst scores his hat-trick, Nobby Styles doing a jig of delight, or Bobby Moore being hoisted to the team's shoulders, holding aloft the Jules Rimet trophy. These great moments can bring back wonderful, positive memories that can be used to unite generations to tackle three of the biggest challenges facing an ageing population: dementia, depression, and loneliness. That's a tonic for everyone, especially perhaps for older people whose opportunities to get out and engage with others are less frequent than they used to be. So let's have a listen to Sir Geoff Hurst and Gordon Banks OBE talking about their experience of dementia. And after that, it would be wrong not to include the highlights of the 1966 World Cup win. Enjoy the moment in all its 3 minutes of glory.
It feels like yesterday.
We felt invincible because we had the whole country behind us.
They are treasured memories of 1966, when England won the World Cup. But striker Sir Geoff Hurst and goalkeeper Gordon Banks know they are the lucky ones. Some of their former teammates now have dementia and no longer remember England's World Cup win.
It's one of the great things about winning the World Cup are the memories, the camaraderie, the team spirit. And people still remember it today. The people come up to us both and say, fantastic, who've maybe there or watched it. So the memories, so to lose that very important thing of their memory for the players and how they're involved is very sad.
Nobby Styles, Martin Peters and Ray Wilson have all been diagnosed with dementia, a cruel condition that has no cure.
When we run round the pitch with that trophy in our hand, and everybody can remember Nobby, you know, skipping like a little lad, you know, and they'll never forget that. And of course, he's one of the ones that's got dementia.
Gordon lost his own brother to Alzheimer's in 2012.
To see him change like he did was just incredible to me, you know, visiting him and him not remembering who I was, and it was just so sad.
The England legends have returned to Wembley as part of a campaign by the Alzheimer's Society and are hoping to raise funds to find a cure.
We just hope that, you know, people can remember those lads and what they did for this country, you know, and hope that they'll support this.
The support, you know, and you know, to unite against dementia.
They were teammates then and are still united now in trying to tackle dementia.
The therapy suite.
As the Germans kick off, coming up for its crucial test. England looked unfamiliar in their red shirts. And what a test for the 22 star players, 90 minutes away from the game's highest glory or defeat. The West German attack had bite and purpose. On they came again. An English defensive lapse gave the ball to Haller. And that was it. One down after 12 minutes spurred the English attack. But there was no stopping England. This time a chance came to West Ham's Geoff Hurst.
It's the equaliser!
Play was faithfully reflected by the score, 1-1, at half-time. But as England kicked off, playing right to left and quickly built up an attack, excitement made the Wembley atmosphere electric. In the dying minutes of the match, the jubilant English supporters' nerves were strained to breaking point. Germany would not let up. Then, seconds before the final whistle, agony for England. Weber scored. It had to be extra time. England began with a vigour and speed astounding after the gruelling 90 minutes they'd already played. Then Geoff Hurst, cool and collected, had the ball in the net. It bounced out. Goal claimed England. No goal, protested the Germans. The referee consulted the linesman, who'd been in line with the posts. And goal it was. England led again, 3-2. When there was only a minute to go, England still had no thought of being content with that one-goal lead. Racing to beat the whistle, Geoff Hurst saw an opening in the defence and achieved the hat-trick. Bobby Moore led England up to the Royal Box to receive the Jules Rimet Cup and the winners' medals.
If you'd like more information on dementia, there are many websites to have a look at. Here are three which you may find useful. The NHS, www.nhs.uk/conditions/dementia. The Alzheimer's Society, www.alzheimers.org.uk. And finally, Dementia UK, www.dementiauk.org. You're listening to UK Health Radio with a Therapy Suite special all about dementia. In a moment, Nicole Mitchell, a massage therapist, shares her thoughts and experience on what it's like to work with clients with dementia. I've also got wise words on the way later on in the show. If you haven't taken a look at the UK Health Radio schedule recently, do so, as there are some great new presenters and programmes to listen to. You won't find a greater mix of specialist knowledge and advice to listen to anywhere else on the net. So keep it locked to UK Health Radio, real feel-good radio. UK Health Radio is the official media partner of the Complementary Therapy Awards, which takes place in October. And my guest this week is Nicole Mitchell, a specialist in the field of massage and dementia, and is one of the entrants. I first spoke to Nicole a few weeks ago, and she blew me away with her knowledge, experience, and views on how massage can help those suffering with dementia. Nicole, thanks for joining me. Perhaps you could start by telling us what you do, why you do it, and how you got started.
Well, I'm a holistic massage practitioner who specialises in treating people who live with dementia. I first got into this quite a number of years ago, about 12 years ago, I suppose now. My mum used to work at a local nursing home, and she basically kept nagging the matron who lived there and saying, you know, my daughter does massage and I really think it would help the people who live here and improve their lives if she came and maybe gave them a massage once a week or something. So eventually the matron caved in and interviewed me and said, yes, she'd very much like me to come in and see some people, especially those who she probably felt were a bit more disconnected, I suppose, and a bit more difficult to engage with. Maybe they also had nobody who really visited them, so they were particularly isolated from family and friends and so on. So I started working with people who live with dementia and was really thrown in the deep end, and I was given 3 pages to understand how to deal with people who live with dementia. And it was all about the reality orientation approach, which of course is dragging people kicking and screaming into our reality without any regard for their feelings or understanding where they're coming from. Not long afterwards, I came across Penny Garner's work, Contented Dementia, and that started me off on a road where I wanted to learn more and help understand how to communicate and connect with people with dementia. So I started to research like I do, and I treat my clients as the experts in their condition, and tried to understand a bit more about the disease. And as time went on, I thought, well, I need a course, and I couldn't find a course. So I started developing a course myself. And from conception, I suppose, to the first course delivery was about 20, 21 months. And I started delivering that about 7 years ago, just in Cornwall near where I live. and through the support of colleagues and professional organisations, have been able to get it out and start tickling it across the UK now. So that's why I did it. It was really just one of those serendipitous things, I suppose. Ironically, dementia runs in our family. Both my maternal grandma, she had both Alzheimer's and vascular dementia, and grandpa, we're never sure which one he had. There was always people always unsure as to you know which dementia he had. But ironically, mum also developed early onset dementia after developing a mild cognitive impairment, and unfortunately that is one of the more aggressive forms of dementia. But the beauty of it is it was actually her who got me into working with people who live with this disease, and now I can use my skills to connect with mum in a more meaningful way. So why do I do it? I do it because, well, I love it, and I find the brain absolutely fascinating. I'm no neuroscientist by any means, but I love all aspects of the brain, how it works, why it works, not just from the dementia point of view, but I'm also interested in trauma as well. As for how does massage help people who live with dementia, well, there are the obvious reasons as to how massage helps us all, you know, and I see many people in my general practice. But with people who have dementia, there was a study done in 2007 by the Alzheimer's Society, and they basically found out that for every 6 hours care that was given in a care home setting, only 2 minutes involved anything other than personal care, you know, like helping someone with their food or their personal care and cleaning, etc. So, you know, 2 minutes, and I just think that isn't enough. And as we know, there are increasing bodies of evidence which show that if we don't connect with other human beings, then we start to isolate ourselves, and we start to suffer with mental illness. And when that kicks in, obviously, then you're more likely to suffer with physical illnesses as well. And there's a great therapist called Naomi Fire, who has just done the most amazing validation therapy and developed this kind of therapy. And she says that if people are disconnected and they give up, then they go inwards, and then they start to slip into vegetative psychosis. And I firmly believe that touch and massage and touching with meaning helps prevent people going into vegetative psychosis. And that's also why I don't just stop at massage and touch. I try and bring validation into my work. I bring reminiscence into my work. I take bubbles in my bag to work. You know, part of my toolkit is a bottle of bubbles. It always comes with me. And I often have balloons in my bag as well, just because they're sensory, playful things. And actually, it can take people back to a really fun, joyful place, maybe in childhood or with their grandchildren. And yeah, just little simple things like that can help connect with people. As for other benefits, well, there are just huge benefits. It's life-affirming. It can improve mental function. And if you're addressing unmet needs, things like pain issues, then quite often people are presenting with behaviours that we find really difficult. So pain is often one of those the issues that causes behaviour that we find difficult to manage. And there was a study done, I forget when it was now, but in the last decade or so, there was a study done where people with dementia who presented with behaviour we find challenging, they were given a paracetamol, and people who were already on a low dosage painkiller, they were given an opiated painkiller. And what they found was there was a 70% decrease in the behaviours that we find challenging. So, you know, often it's unmet needs through pain, or it might be unmet needs through, you know, feeling like there may be somewhere else in their life and trying to make sense of where they are now by visiting somewhere else in the bottom drawers of their life. And they might be thinking, wow, actually, you know, look at where the sun is in the sky, and I should be collecting my children, I should be going and getting the shopping and making tea. So, you know, there are all these unmet needs, and you have to be a bit of a detective, really, to try and figure out what the drivers are behind people's behaviours. So then you can start to fulfil needs and work with wider supporters like carers and families and other professionals to, you know, to try and figure out what their needs are so that you can all work together. One of the things that I found very poignant in recent months is I provide a service to my community clients who live on their own, just to ring and say, you know, hello, it's Nicole. I'm just ringing in to check that it's okay for our 1 o'clock appointment later today. And one particular time I forgot. Well, anyway, this particular day I was so busy and I kept thinking, oh, I must ring such and such. I must ring such and such. I'll call her Joan. I must ring Joan. And it clean forgot. And I turned up on her doorstep and I was like, hello, Joan. And she was like, oh, Nicole. Oh, I wasn't expecting you here. So anyway, Joan said, you know, I wasn't expecting you to be here right now. And I just said, oh, I'm sorry. Is it still convenient or do you want me to go? She said, oh, no. Come on in. Come on in. No, of course I want my massage. And I said, I'm really sorry. And she said, oh, that's OK. She goes, it's just usually I really enjoy the anticipation of a massage. And it just helped me realise that there are so many different ways that that dementia can disable people. And really part of my role in the more holistic sense is to enable people. So now I'm really strict with myself and I make absolutely sure that I ring any community clients before I go and visit them.
You're listening to UK Health Radio.
Oh,
This is UK Health Radio. You're listening to Duncan Ellison with the Therapy Suite special programme all about dementia. I'm joined in the studio by Nicole Mitchell, who has entered the Complementary Therapy Awards, which takes place in October this year. Nicole is a specialist massage therapist who specialises with clients who are suffering from dementia. Perhaps you could tell us more about the benefits of what you do.
Other benefits that come from massaging people who live with dementia are boosting self-esteem, boosting self-worth. You can help people navigate their fear, whether that be the past, because people who live with dementia are scared of the past and losing their identity. They're scared of the present because they might not understand it or might feel really like they're lacking in confidence and make a fool of themselves. And they're scared of the future as well, because quite often if they have an understanding of their disease, then, you know, what's going to come is just really scary. So helping people be very present and in a good space in the present can really help fulfil, you know, that need. It also helps provide opportunities to trust building relationships. And certainly, you know, I don't just teach body workers, but I also teach people who are carers, dementia liaison workers, activity workers, because they all want to learn how to weave nurturing touch in a focused way into the work that they do, again, because they understand that there are needs that they need to fulfill. Something that I came across a few years ago when I used to facilitate information sessions for carers was a couple came to me and they said that they were the secondary carers for their aunt, and their aunt used to go to church, and they used to take her to church to give their other aunt a break, or it might have been their mum actually, but they wanted to give the primary carer a break. But unfortunately, the vicar at the church turned around and said, "Oh, your aunt can no longer come to church because she's, you know, her behaviour, people are finding just a little bit too difficult to deal with." And this was because she, there was a gentleman who worked at the or attended the church, sorry, and he really reminded her of an illicit love affair, and she was just all over him basically, and they found it really difficult to manage. So what they did after we talked about nurturing touch and how, you know, it starts to release oxytocin, which is your love and attachment, your calm and well-being hormone, they really took that on board, and they took it back to primary carer, this lady's sister, and said, you know, this is what we've been told. So the primary carer, the sister of the lady living with dementia, next time she helped bathe her sister, she showered her with kisses and hugs and just made the experience less perfunctory and just really more, well, just a more beautiful experience, really. And they came back the following week and they said, and guess what? We took our aunt to church and she was fine again. And do you know what? We think that, you know, she topped up her love tank. So I now said, oh, I'm going to nick that one. That sounds so lovely. And I do think that because of that physiological reaction that happens after nurturing touch occurs, positive touch, the oxytocin is released. And yes, it does. It tops up your love tank. And it only takes 20 seconds if, you know, positive, meaningful touch. It only takes 20 seconds for that oxytocin to kick in. So I say to people, it's really quite incredible the power that you have just by changing your tack. As for teaching massage, especially for dementia, well, when you're treating people who are vulnerable, it's really important that you get it right. When people come on my course, not only do they get sort of dementia in a nutshell, so everybody starts on a level playing field, but we explore the parts of the brain and the impact that has. We also explore that dementia, it's not just the disease itself, but it's everything that comes with it. I mean, there are just so many aspects to think of, all the reasons that we would normally give ourselves for forgetting things or struggling with things on a daily basis. People who live with dementia have all that on top. So, you know, if people are tired or are unwell, then they're more likely to forget. And then people with dementia have all that on top. And they are constantly navigating a really tricky world, and their perception might be altered. And the energy and concentration it takes to navigate a world that no longer makes as much sense as it used to is huge. So we explore that. But fundamentally, we do go through some very sticky legislation that I feel it's really important for people to take on board and understand. One, because then they can be acting in the person's best interests. But two, that they can be an advocate. And, you know, and I have had to advocate for people who, you know, whose dignity has been compromised. And it's empowered not only my client, but myself as well, when I've actually had to make a stand and think like, well, no, actually, that's contravening the Mental Capacity Act and the Human Rights Act. And, you know, and I've worked with people and practice has been improved as a result, which, you know, is all any of us can hope for, really. And then out of the legislation, really, comes consent. Permission and touch are absolutely fundamental. And again, in the course, we look at sort of the protocol that you have to go through in obtaining permission. But not only that, but actually how we seek permission from a person who might not be able to give verbal consent, and when you're looking for that. And without giving too much away, at the moment, it's more about understanding the congruence, and also understanding that if someone's body is completely congruent, then they are happy about the interaction that's going on. And I also bear in mind that when someone lives with dementia and they find things more tricky, then every day circumstances can suddenly become traumatic. And when someone is in trauma, then their sort of higher cortex brain starts to shut down. So actually they're disabled even more. Then we just are sort of dealing with feelings. And then if they're really traumatized, then even that shuts down and it goes back to fight, flight, friend, freeze or flop. And what I, you know, through my work with working with people who've been through trauma or people who support people through trauma, my understanding is that if someone's had to survive by befriending a perpetrator, for example, then the congruency of consent is not there. You know, they might smile their way through and they might seem to give permission, but maybe their breathing's a bit more shallow and stunted. And it's things like that that you kind of want to look for when you're looking at someone's body language, to make sure that you're not traumatizing them further and that you really are getting permission. So yes, permission, consent, touch, really important. A client who stands out, a lasting memory of a client. There's a lovely story I have, and I'll call him Ted. I went in to deliver his usual weekly treatment, and as soon as I opened the door and I said, "Hello, Ted, it's Nicole," you know, giving him cues and clues, he just looked up and he said, "Oh my God, there are dead bloody bodies everywhere." And I went, "Oh, Ted, really?" I said, "How awful that you're seeing this." And he said, he said, "Yeah, yes." And he was just in a state of absolute panic. And I said, "Well, listen, Ted, I'm coming to help you." And I just took his hand and I crouched down so that, you know, I had eye contact with him. And I said, "My goodness," I said, "you have been through so much. I'm now going to stay with you and I'm going to help you. And in fact, I'm going to take you to a safe place." And I didn't physically take him anywhere. He was a very unsteady man on his feet, but he was sat in his easy chair, you know, that had one of those footrests that comes up, one of those lovely electric chairs. So I just worked with him and got him into a safe, gentle space. And I said, right, you're safe. You're here with me. It's Nicole. And I'm going to have a look at that injury in your knee and see if we can do something to smooth it out and make you feel better. And you know, are you happy with that? And he was happy with that. And within 5 minutes of smoothing his knee and just doing very, very gentle introductory massage, he was leaning back, his blue eyes were twinkling, and he was smiling again. So yes, that's one of many sort of lasting stories of a client who it was about validating, I suppose, and acknowledging that he was feeling awful, but then also working round so that he could get to a space where he was enabled to enjoy some therapy. And again, that's another one of the beautiful benefits of massage or nurturing touch is it can help bring about resolution for some people. Oh, so you were asking me about stress management and how important it massage is for people with busy lives. Well, there's an old Chinese saying that says, if you haven't got time for it, to relax, then you should make time. And I make sure I always schedule in time. And in fact, every course I run, I ask the students to put up their hands if they've all had a massage in the last 6 months, 3 months, 1 month. And very quickly you find that the number of hands diminishes. And then I just explain, well, you know, you want people to buy this service from you and buy into it. But you also need to make sure that you're getting your regular treatments, because obviously accumulated stress needs to be dealt with. So, yes, I think massage is very important for people with busy lives. It gives you permission to utterly stop. For me, it replenishes, and again, that oxytocin, you know, I know that when that's flooding my body while I'm having a massage, that's boosting my immune system. So hopefully I stay well for longer in between treatments. And it just gives me permission in a very busy life to utterly stop. And I'm very thankful to Angie Richardson, hello, who gives me a great massage and really listens, not only with her ears but her hands as well. And she really gives me what I need on about a 4 to 6 weekly basis. And I always find, you know, people always say, you know, who does you? And if you go, then, you know, again, why would anybody want to buy into the service that you're buying? Massage, if it suits you and you like hands-on, I just think it's a wonderful way to release, process, let go of life's accumulated stresses.
Are you ready? Are you ready? Are you ready? Are you ready? Are you ready for the time of your life? It's time to stand up and fight. It's all right, it's all right. Hand in hand, we'll take a caravan to the motherland. One by one, we're gonna stand up with pride. One that can't be denied. Stand up, stand up. From the highest mountain valley low, we'll join together with hearts of gold. Now the children of the world can see this is a better place for us to be. The place in which we were born, so neglected and torn apart. Every woman, every man, join the caravan of love. Stand up, stand up. stand up, everybody take a stand, join the caravan of love. Stand up, stand up, stand up, I'm your brother. I'm your brother, don't you know? She's my sister. Sister, don't you know? We'll be living in a world of peace. In the day when everyone is free. We'll bring the young and the old. Won't you let your love flow? From your heart. Every woman, every man. Join the caravan of love. Stand up, stand up, stand up. Everybody take a stand. Join the caravan of love. Stand up, stand up, stand up. I'm your brother. I'm your brother, don't you know? She's my sister.
Before we move on, if you have a mental health story to tell, whether it's your journey or someone close to you, or if you run a mental health project, do get in touch either on Twitter at Duncan_Ellison or email me at Duncan@ukhealthradio.com. More from Nicole on the way and wise words still to come. This is UK Health Radio. My name's Duncan and I'll bring you a new show every 2 weeks. If you like this show and want more, you can listen to all the different programmes UK Health Radio has to offer. You can choose the live play schedule or you can download your favourite programmes on demand wherever and whenever you need to. This week I'm speaking to Nicole Mitchell and this is a Therapy Suite Dementia special. Being a therapist in any form can be stressful and it's important to ensure you care for yourself as well as your clients. Nicole, how do you unwind?
How do I unwind? Well, I've got several ways of unwinding. I love gardening, getting back to nature. So walking my dog Elvis, I love walking him. And I have to timetable that in as well. I just love gardening, growing vegetables, fruit, flowers, creating havens for bees and butterflies, just over a year ago my partner and I purchased a piece of land which is about a 10-minute amble from where we live in Cornwall, and we're trying to turn it into a permaculture food forest. But one of the principles of permaculture is not to just keep working hard. It's to just sit and be and observe, because then the land will tell you where something needs to go, or with your experience and your limited knowledge, you can then decide, well, actually that's not working over there, so maybe we need to bring it over here. But if you just keep going busy and just going in hammer and tongs, then you're more likely to make mistakes. But again, the great thing about permaculture is it's not really mistakes. It's just a way of learning, and it's a forever changing and fluid journey, I suppose. I also make sure, as I've already said, that I have my regular massage. I love reading. I spend, I'd probably rather read than watch programs, TV and movies, although I do watch those. And in fact, I love watching, I'm going to make a real admission now, my daughter and I love sitting on the sofa and getting lost in Once Upon a Time on Netflix. So yeah, I have lots of different ways of unwinding, and spending time with my family is a great way of doing that, and friends as well. I've got some smashing friends who really get me. So, yes, a cup of tea or an ale or two and shooting the breeze with friends. Yeah, that's another great way to unwind. I've recently, in the past 18 months or so, I went on a story massage courses, and that really opened up so many possibilities for me. I mean, one, I use it with my daughter as an adoptive mum and as a therapeutic mum. I started writing social stories, which are about challenging situations for young people and children, or are to do with attachment issues, or are to do with trauma and resolving, sort of, you know, helping to at least peel back some of the layers that trauma can bring along. So I started writing some stories which I use with story massage, but I've also been doing a lot more work in the past year and a half with people with learning difficulties or additional needs. I've been working with abuse survivors, domestic abuse survivors, and their families. And when touch can become an issue, you know, either through sexual abuse or violence, I think it's really important to have more playful, fun ways of bringing about very good, solid body boundaries. And I think story massage enables young people to become very aware of the boundaries that they have, and empower them, really, enable them to take the power back so that they are able to say no. And the other thing I really love about it is it underpins common courtesies like pleases and thank yous and listening to each other. So I've become more involved in doing story massage, and I've got a great workshop coming up at a local festival where, actually, instead of it necessarily being on a therapeutic level, it's really just going to be fun, playful, lots of Sandra's and Mary's stickers to help people sticker up their own stories. So on the back of their inspiration, really, I've set up a website called Story Hands Massage, where I offer workshops and training and sessions for whether it be schools or, organisations who work with people with additional needs. Just anybody, really, who wants to look for a more playful way of bringing nurture and touch into their lives, I suppose. One of the other really important aspects of my training course are approaches, how you approach someone who lives with dementia. There's just more to consider, really, and again, this is really about being in the person's zone and really understanding what makes them tick, and it's showing a genuine interest. So we explore all that during the course, but we also spend quite a bit of time looking at drivers behind behaviour and what those unmet needs are. So again, that either you can help meet those needs or work with other people around that person, or and that person as well, of course, to truly help meet those needs. But communication is so important. There are lots of practical tools that you can put in your box, and there are just little things that you can do, like addressing the person using their name first, so you're keying them into you and the conversation you're about to have with them. If you go, "Hi, how are you, Ted?" then, you know, Ted's only just cued in when you've mentioned his name. But if you go, "Ted, how are you?" or "Ted, it's nice to see you," then it means you're enabling him just that little bit better. And it's amazing how, if you just subtly change the semantics or the way you speak with someone, it can really help enable somebody. There are also approaches like physically what you do, and what you might do to make sure that you hold the space with that person to make sure that they feel safe about the treatment. And that can be very physical, or it could, you might want to go through certain routines, and repetition. You know, if you befriend repetition, for example, by, you know, constantly maybe using a name and cueing them in and saying who you are and what you're doing and what you're about to do, and I just quietly kind of repeat that as I go, just so that I'm not suddenly diving in, because, you know, someone without any cognitive impairment, you know, you do your routine and there are no surprises. But if someone has got a memory issue and they've forgotten what happened 30 seconds ago, they might just need you to gently coach them through what's going on in a way that isn't actually shaming them, but is enabling them. However, that's not to say I haven't got it wrong, because I have been told to shut up in no uncertain terms by some clients when I've maybe gone too far. But, you know, that's all part of the learning process, and it's all about, you know, understanding that person and what makes them tick. So, yes, there are lots of tools on communication that I give to people. And because dementia is so fluid and a person's presentation can change from moment to moment, you really do have to be very present, very on the pulse, and you really do have to be listening, because sometimes it's just those subtleties, or it can be a big change and you kind of have to follow them wherever they are, and enter their world so you can understand what's going on. And again, by doing that, you get to understand what's making them tick, what's making them unhappy, what you might be able to do to help resolve that. So, yes, I don't always get it right, and I'm always tweaking the manual, as I say. I think between every course, there's something new added. So where do I see this all going? Well, I feel that as a holistic practitioner, my work doesn't stop within the four walls of my clinic, and neither does it stop out in the community, within people's homes, whether they be personal homes, residential homes, etc. I see that building good connections with people like the NHS, for instance, the Complex Care and Dementia Liaison Services down in Cornwall. I see building good connections with nursing homes, care organisations, and anybody who's involved in supporting people who live with dementia and their carers. And as part of that package, using positive touch to, you know, improve people's lives, improve people's well-being, because I do think that you can live well despite how disabling this disease can be. And I see my role as basically trying to teach other people how to enable people to live better lives and show that we don't have to fill all the spaces with words, and that actually we can connect without words.
And that's almost it for this week on the Therapy Suite. It's been an absolute pleasure having Nicole in the studio to find out all about what she does, how she does it, and working with dementia clients. It's been absolutely fascinating, Nicole. Thanks once again, and best of luck with the Complimentary Therapy Awards. Just before we close the doors to the Therapy Suite for this week, here are your wise words. Attract what you expect. Reflect what you desire. Become what you respect, and mirror what you admire. Don't forget, if you have a mental health concern or have been affected by anything raised on today's programme, please consult your GP or find a counselling service to talk to. You've been listening to The Therapy Suite with me, Duncan Ellison, only on UK Health Radio. Stay well, keep smiling, see you next time.
And here comes Hurst. He's got some people are on the pitch. They think it's all over. It is now. It's 4-1.